Greeting, my fright-loving fiends, and welcome back to Stories, Fables, Ghostly Tales, your cozy little corner of the uncanny, where the tea is always piping hot, and the dead might just drop by for a chat. I'm your ever-devoted, rarely well-rested host, the Tale Teller, and tonight, I am bringing you something a little different. A story that doesn't scream in your face, but lingers behind your ear like a whisper you almost didn't hear. Something quiet, aching, and a little too close to home. We're not talking creaking floorboards or faces in the mirror tonight, no, no. Tonight's ghost story isn't about what's hiding under your bed. It's about what might be waiting patiently, lovingly, on your front porch. So fluff your pillow, lock your door, or leave it open, because this story walks softly. It's called The House at the Edge of Nowhere, and it begins like this. My father told me to wait in the house, and I did, long after I had any right to. Enjoy. The House at the Edge of Nowhere, Part 1, The Waiting. I don't remember falling asleep, but I wake up to the warm, dry hiss of the radiator and the smell of old wood and dust. The air feels still, like the whole world hasn't moved yet. It's 6:14 a.m. The little clock on the side table blinks in soft red letters, always the same time. I stretch in bed for a while, listening to the gentle creaks in the walls, then push myself up and wrap the old blanket around my shoulders. It's too big, and it drags a little behind me, but I like that. It feels like armor. I walk to the window, careful not to make the floorboards groan too loud, and sit on the wide sill, tucking my feet under me. I do this every morning. It's a kind of ritual now. Outside, the road stretches long and pale beneath a sky the color of wet paper. There's a low fence across the yard, a mailbox leaning slightly to the left, and past that, just open space. Fields, trees, and the pale ribbon of road curling into the distance. I wait. Dad said he'd come get me. Soon, he promised, with that look he gives when he means something.
Just wait here for me, okay? Just stay in the house no matter what.
So, I've stayed. The house isn't big, but it's nice in that quiet old-fashioned way. I don't go upstairs, it's just bedrooms, and I don't really need more than one. There's a little kitchen with worn counters and a kettle that takes forever to boil. I make tea sometimes, or toast, even though I never seem to get hungry. I've been reading the books in the living room. There's a whole shelf of them, mostly mysteries. I like the idea of things getting solved, of people being found. The power works, the lights are dim, but they're warm. There's an old rotary phone on the wall that I've picked up a few times, but the line just buzzes softly, like the world's still out there, but too far away to reach. That's okay. Dad's coming soon. I'm halfway through a chapter. Something about a missing girl and a lighthouse. When I see him. There's a man walking down the road. Not many people come this way. I sit up straighter and wipe at the foggy window with my sleeve. He's tall, with a coat that moves gently around his legs as he walks. His hands are in his pockets, his head tilted slightly, like he's studying the landscape or listening to something I can't hear. I lean in closer. He's not Dad, that much I know right away. He's younger, not a teenager, but not old either. His hair is dark, a little messy. He walks with that easy rhythm of someone who isn't in a hurry. Still, something about him makes my breath hitch. He comes all the way to the porch steps and pauses. For a moment, I think he'll knock. I'm already halfway out of my blanket before I stop myself. I'm not supposed to open the door for strangers. He doesn't knock, though. He stands there, looking at the front door like he knows it well. Then, after a long pause, he says, softly but clearly enough to cut through the glass,
"You've been waiting a long time."
I freeze. I can't tell if he sees me. I haven't moved. I haven't made a sound. I clear my throat, and before I can stop myself, I call out,
"My dad's coming. You can't be here."
There's a moment where he just stands there. Then he smiles. Not wide, not creepy, just a small, understanding smile. The kind people give when they know something you don't, but they're not ready to say it.
"I know,"
he says. Then he turns and walks back down the road. That night, I sit on the floor near the heater with the blanket wrapped tightly around me. I don't read. I just listen to the wind outside and let my thoughts drift. I think about the man's voice. It was warm, gentle, and something else. Something underneath it. Familiar. There was something about the way he smiled. The way his mouth curved at the corners. It reminded me of my dad. Not exactly, but almost. Part 2. The man at the door. I don't sleep much after that. I keep thinking about the man. The way he looked at the door like he already knew what was behind it. Like he didn't need to knock because it wasn't really for him. It was for me. Like he was waiting for me to open it. I lie awake until the light changes. And when I finally drift off sometime after dawn, it's like falling into a lake. Quiet, heavy, dreamless. When I wake up again, the clock says 6:14. That makes me smile a little. Maybe the power's been knocked out somewhere down the line. It wouldn't be the first time. This far out, the wires are old, and Dad always said the weather could pull the world apart if you gave it time. The window's fogged again. I wipe the small circle clear with my sleeve, expecting the same empty road. But he's back. Same coat, same slow walk. He comes from the same direction, which doesn't make sense. There's nothing out there but trees and gravel. No town, no highway, no reason to walk that stretch twice unless you're trying to get somewhere you didn't reach the first time. He stops at the porch again. This time, I am already standing by the door. I haven't unlocked it, but I'm close enough to hear him if he speaks. He does.
"Good morning, Elise."
I don't answer. His voice is the same as yesterday. Warm, careful, like someone trying not to frighten a wild animal. I haven't told him my name. I'm sure of that.
"You don't have to be afraid,"
he says, as if he's heard my thoughts. I glance at the deadbolt. My hand hovers near it. Then I step back.
"Who are you?"
I ask through the door. He's quiet a long time. I imagine him tilting his head, measuring what he should and shouldn't say.
"I'm someone who was asked to look after you. Your dad. He wanted me to check in."
I feel the air go out of my lungs.
"You're lying."
"No, I'm not lying."
"He wouldn't send someone else. He said he would come."
"I know. He still will."
I want to believe him. God, I do. But something doesn't sit right.
"What's his name?"
I ask.
"My dad. Say it."
A pause. Then,
"I don't think you'd believe me, even if I did."
I take a step back from the door.
"You should go.
He doesn't argue, he just says,
I'll come back tomorrow. You don't have to let me in yet.
Then his footsteps creak down the porch and fade into the dirt. I try to shake it off. I make toast even though I'm not hungry. I flip through one of the books I've already read. There's a section circled in pencil, and I don't remember doing that. I try calling someone, anyone, on the rotary phone, but the buzzing on the line is louder than usual today. Almost angry, if you can believe it. By evening, I convince myself that he's just someone from town. A neighbor, maybe. A family friend I don't remember. The longer I think about it, the more possible it seems. Maybe I just forgot. I hit my head or something. I felt fuzzy since I woke up here. It's not unreasonable to think that, is it? Still, I double-check the locks before bed. Just in case. When I wake up the next morning, 6:14 again. I go to the window first thing. He's already there, standing at the edge of the porch, waiting. This time, he's not looking at the door. He's looking up at the window. At me. I duck back instinctively, heart hammering. When I peek again, he raises a hand in greeting. He's closer now. I can see his face better. His cheekbones are sharp, and his hair falls just right around his ears. He looks a little older than I thought at first. There's something about the way he carries himself. Gentle, careful, but not weak. His mouth twitches into a smile. And I swear to God, it's my dad's smile. Not completely, but the shape of it. The way one side lifts just a fraction higher than the other. A detail so small no one else would notice, but I would. Because I've seen that smile every day of my life. When I come home with scraped knees. When I brought him burnt toast in bed. When he tried not to cry dropping me off at school. I don't realize I've opened the window until I feel the cold air rush in.
You're early today,
I say, keeping my voice flat.
I figured I'd save you the waiting.
I wasn't.
He laughs, not mean, not mocking, like he's genuinely amused.
You were,
he says. I narrow my eyes.
Do you? Do I know you?
Another pause. The same careful silence.
Not yet.
I close the window. I don't know why I don't slam it. Maybe because there's something in his voice that doesn't feel dangerous. It feels sad. Like he's waiting, too. Later, I found a photograph in one of the drawers. I don't recall putting it there either. It's me and Dad. I may be 10. We're standing on the porch of a cabin, bundled in coats. Bundled up in coats. He's kneeling next to me, his arm around my shoulder. We're both smiling. His smile matches the one I saw this morning. Exactly. It's nothing. Probably. Just my brain playing tricks. But I keep the photo under my pillow that night. And when I close my eyes, I hear that same voice say again, soft as breath against glass.
You've been waiting a long time.
Part 3. The Edges Fray. I start locking the window at night. I don't know why. He hasn't tried to come in. He hasn't even touched the doorknob. But something about the way he looks at me, like he's memorizing my face, makes me nervous. Not scared, just like I should be remembering something I've forgotten. He's always there now. Not just in the mornings. I see him during the day sometimes, walking along the edge of the yard with his hands in his pockets, never getting too close. He hums to himself sometimes. I can't quite make out the tune, but it gets stuck in my head anyway. I find myself humming it back without realizing. He never speaks unless I do. It's like he's waiting for permission. Like I'm the one who has to open something first. The odd thing is, he's starting to look more like my father. Not exactly. He's still too young, his voice smoother, and his hair is darker. But it's in the way he tilts his head when I speak, or the way he folds his arms, leaning against the porch railing just like Dad used to when he was thinking. It's not a trick. He's not pretending. It's like he's remembering him alongside me. Yesterday, I asked him how he knew my name. He looked at me for a long time before answering.
Your dad told me.
He said, that's all. No explanation. No elaboration. Just that. And then...
He said you wouldn't open the door for anyone but him.
The house feels different now. Though I can't say why. Maybe it's just winter settling in. The air is heavier. The sky has that grayish tint that comes before snow. And the trees look like they're holding their breath. The heater clicks on more often, but it never seems to warm the place. My blanket has started smelling like dust and something faintly sweet, like overripe fruit. The books on the shelf are in the wrong order. I know that sounds crazy, but they are. I recall putting The Secret Garden between two Agatha Christies. Now it's not even on the shelf. I check under the couch. Nothing. I check the attic. I didn't even remember the house had an attic until today. The stairs are narrow and steep. My head brushes the sloped ceiling when I reach the top. There's a mirror up there, leaning against the wall. Old, with rust blooming at the edges of the glass. I don't remember seeing it before either. Why? I don't want to look, but I do. It's me. Mostly. My hair is right, my clothes are the same, but there's something wrong with my eyes. Like they're too still. Like the me in the mirror isn't just copying. I mean, isn't waiting for me to move first, so to speak. She's just watching. I back away, slowly. When I go downstairs, he's at the door again. I don't speak this time. I just sit on the floor, on the other side of the wood, my back to it. I listen to him breathing. Not heavy, just steady, like waves on sand. Eventually, he speaks.
I know this is hard.
My throat tightens.
You're doing well.
He adds.
I'm not doing anything.
I whisper.
You're remembering. That's something.
What am I supposed to remember?
I ask. There's a pause.
Nothing you're not ready for.
I close my eyes. There's something in his voice again, that ache. Like he's sorry for something he hasn't said out loud. Or maybe can't. I don't know how long we sit there like that. Later that night, I dream of a car. I can't tell if I am dreaming it again, or this is the first time, but this time... I remember more. The sound of tires on wet pavement. Wipers working overtime. Dad's voice, tight, controlled.
Just hold on, sweetheart. All right? Almost there.
Then something white, flashing through the windshield like a ghost. I wake up gasping. I'm still in bed. Still in the house. The light through the curtains is soft and grey. The clock says... 6:14. Of course it does. I go to the window. He's already on the porch, not standing this time, sitting, like he's been waiting all night. And this morning he looks older. Not by much, just a little more tired around the eyes, a little heavier in the shoulders. The change is so small, I wouldn't notice it if I didn't already know him. But I do. It's him. Not my father, not yet, but getting closer. I don't open the door, but I unlock it just once. Then I sit back down on the floor and pull the blanket tight around me. My heart feels like it's beating against something hollow inside my chest. Like it's knocking on a door I'm afraid to open. I think I'm starting to understand what he meant. Not all at once, but I'm remembering something. Something I promised not to forget. Part 4, The Cracks in the World. I leave the door unlocked for the next 3 days. Not because I'm ready to let him in, I'm not. But because part of me wants to know what he'll do with the invitation. The answer? Nothing. He still knocks. Always softly. Always just once. Sometimes I think I hear him sit down on the porch again, humming that low tune. I press my ear to the door, but never open it. There's something comforting in the routine. He arrives, he waits, he says my name.
You're remembering more.
He told me yesterday.
Even if it doesn't feel that way.
I wanted to yell at him, ask him what the hell he means, but I didn't. Because he's right. I had another dream. This dream was smaller, slower. We were at the diner off Route 15, the one with the broken jukebox and the lime green booths. I was maybe 12. Dad was across the table from me, showing me how to blow straw wrappers at strangers without getting caught. His laugh was big and open, like it always was when he was pretending to be strong for my sake. But there was something wrong. No sound. His mouth moved, his shoulders shook, but everything was silent, like watching an old film reel with the volume turned off. I woke up with tears already on my face. The house, it's starting to change. I don't want to admit it, not even to myself, but it is. The wallpaper in the hallway is peeling. It wasn't before, I'm sure. Of it. The edges curl back like something breathing underneath. The radio in the kitchen clicks on by itself. No music, just static. A low, wet sound like someone whispering underwater. The photo I keep under my pillow, the one of me and Dad at the cabin, it's different. His face is the same, his arms still around my shoulders. But my face is blurred now, faint, like it was erased with a wet thumb. I try not to think about what that means and why I feel this way. Yesterday, I went outside, only to the porch, just far enough to feel the cold in my lungs. He was already there. He didn't look surprised. If anything, he looked relieved. We sat together, not close, maybe 3 feet apart. I kept my hands in my lap. He didn't speak, not at first. Just looked out towards the trees like he'd been here 100 times before. Then he asked very gently,
"Do you want to try remembering today?"
I shook my head, and he didn't push. The town is wrong now. I went for a walk today just to clear my head. I told myself I'd only go a few blocks, get some air. I hadn't stepped past the gate in so long. The houses are the same as always, neat yards, white fences, shutters painted pale green or blue. But I started noticing things. The same newspaper on every porch, the same pair of birds on every wire, a woman across the street watering a flower bed that doesn't have any flowers, just dirt, dry and cracked. She waved at me. Her smile didn't reach her eyes. When I turned the corner, I saw the man in the grey coat again, the one who walks by every afternoon, except this time, there were two of him. Identical. Same coat, same walk, same twitch of the hand as he checked his watch. One turned down the alley, the other kept walking. And I ran home. That night, I opened the front door. He was there. He looked older again. Not by a lot, but enough. His voice had that rasp Dad always got when he hadn't slept well. His eyes had lines around them, small and careful. He didn't speak, neither did I. We just stood there for a long time, looking at each other. Then I said, very quietly,
"You almost look like him."
His smile was sad.
"I've been trying."
I don't sleep at all that night. I sit at the window, blanket tight around my shoulders, and I watch the sky shift from blue to violet to grey. I don't cry. I don't panic. But something inside me is cracking open. And the cold that seeps in through the walls doesn't feel like weather anymore. It feels like a kind of truth, so to speak. Part 5. The room with no door. I leave the door open this time. Not wide, just a few inches. It's the first morning I don't go to the window first. I sit in the middle of the hallway, wrapped in my blanket like a child, staring at the open sliver of light coming through the doorway. Waiting. And he comes, as always, quiet as falling snow. He pauses just outside. I hear the hesitation in his breath. He's waiting for me to close it again, to lock him out. I don't. And he steps inside. His footsteps are soft, like he's walking through someone else's dream. We sit at the kitchen table. Steam curls up from the tea between us. I don't remember putting the kettle on, but it's there, hot and steeped. The smell of mint. Dad's favorite. He wraps his hands around the cup the same way my father always did. Fingers interlaced like he's praying to something inside the steam. The light catches his face, and I see him. I really see him. It's not a resemblance. It's not a feeling. It's him. It's my father. I blink and my chest pulls so tight, I can't breathe. He looks a little older than I remember, or maybe just tired in a different way. His shoulders sag more. His eyes carry weight they never used to. Like he's been holding something heavy for a long, long time. But it's him. The lines around his mouth. The scar just beneath his left eye from when he fell off the roof fixing the satellite dish. The way he stirs his tea counterclockwise without thinking. It's all there.
"Dad?"
I say. My voice breaks like glass. He looks at me and doesn't say anything for a moment. Then he nods.
I'm sorry.
He whispers.
"I didn't know how else to come back."
The floor shifts beneath me. Not physically, but inside. Like the foundation of everything I've believed is tilting, revealing a second house beneath this one, darker, truer.
"You died. I saw you. I..."
"No."
He says gently.
"I didn't."
That word sits between us like a stone.
"You did."
The phone rings. That old rotary phone on the wall, silent for weeks, buzzing softly at most, suddenly shrieks like it's never done before. I stand, but I already know. I lift the receiver.
"Hello?"
At first, just air. Then a sound. Half sob, half breath.
Elise.
My mother's voice.
Elise.
Thin, fragile, like it had to crawl through something sharp to reach me.
Ellie, I'm so sorry. So sorry, please. Please. Can you hear me?
She's crying. Real, heavy crying. The kind that breaks through your teeth. I grip the phone so hard my fingers go numb.
I'm here. I'm right here.
But she can't hear me. She never could. The line cuts. I don't hang up. I just let the receiver fall from my hand and dangle by its cord, swinging slightly. He's still at the table. He hasn't moved.
Why?
I ask.
Because you wouldn't believe anyone else. Not a stranger. Not a voice in the dark.
I collapse into the chair across from him. All the air leaves my body.
So this whole time?
I start, and then I can't finish.
I told you I'd come get you.
He says. He smiles. That same small smile he used to give me. After dentist appointments and scraped knees and impossible tests.
I never stopped trying.
The room feels colder now. Though the radiator hums behind the wall. Or maybe it's just me.
I died in the car.
I say. He nods.
I was thrown. I remember the glass.
His hands are still around the cup, but they're shaking.
You called my name?
I whisper.
Your hand. I was still holding your hand.
He says, and then softer.
You were already gone.
I don't know how long we sit like that, silent, together. But it's not quiet. There's a sound in the walls, in the floor, in the light. A low, rhythmic hum, like the house itself is breathing, like it's been waiting to.
I don't want to leave you again,
I say.
You're not. I'm here because you stayed too long.
My throat tightens.
I didn't want to be dead.
You didn't want to be alone.
He corrects, gently.
That's not the same thing.
He stands, offers his hand, and I realize that something in me has already let go. It's not peace, not yet, but it's close. Outside, the road has changed. It glows, pale and silver, winding deep into the trees. I don't ask where it leads. I already know. Part 6, the last light in the house. We don't speak as we step outside. The air is cold, but not cruel. The kind of cold that makes everything quiet, like the world is holding its breath. Dad walks beside me, not in front, not leading, like I could turn back if I wanted, like the choice is still mine. But I don't turn back. The house behind us stands still, its windows like watching eyes. The porch light flickers once, then steadies, a final breath. It feels smaller now, like it was never meant to last. The road ahead isn't paved. It isn't even dirt. It's light. Silver grey, soft as ash, winding into the woods that aren't really woods anymore. They shimmer at the edges, trees without bark, leaves that don't rustle in wind that doesn't blow. Nothing about this place moves unless we do. And I realize this road was never leading anywhere. It was waiting for me to take the first step. As we walk, I don't feel heavy. I thought I would. I thought grief would sit on my chest and refuse to budge, but it doesn't. There's still grief. God, yes. There's an ache behind my ribs like something beautiful just ended, and I'll never quite feel it the same again. But there's something else under it. Not peace, not exactly, just permission. Dad hasn't said anything for a while, but then he stops walking. I stop too. We've come to a clearing. Ahead of us, the road curves out of sight between two tall pines. The air beyond it is different, lighter, warm.
Can you come with me?
I ask. He shakes his head.
No, sweetheart.
And he smiles again, small, familiar, and above all else, devastating.
I've got a little more waiting to do, honey.
I cry. Not loud, not wild, just tears. Quiet, steady ones that feel like they've been melting behind my eyes for days, maybe years, and finally found their way out. He pulls me close. His arms are warm, strong, real.
Thank you.
I whisper.
For what?
For coming back for me.
He kisses my forehead.
I always will.
He steps back, and I take one last look at him. His face is the first thing I remember when I came into the world, and now it's the last thing I see before I leave it. I turn and I walk into the trees. The light grows. It doesn't blind me. It wraps around me like the blanket I kept in the hallway, like a breath on the back of my neck, like a father's hand reaching out into the dark. Far behind me, the porch light on the little house flickers once, then fades out. Sometimes I wonder if someone else lives there now, sitting by the window, waiting. Maybe they're still dreaming. Maybe they don't know yet. But I think someday, when they're ready, they'll open the door too. And someone who loves them will be waiting. And there you have it, folks. A house that wasn't a house, a road that didn't go anywhere, and a visit from Death himself dressed as someone we might still love. Isn't that always the way? If you've ever ghosted someone, just know Death's out there ghosting us all back, one lovingly timed porch visit at a time. Remember, if the door ever knocks softly and the man on the other side hums your dad's favourite tune, maybe don't answer, or do. Who am I to stop you? Now, if this tale gently peeled your soul open and left it humming with sorrow and stardust, do me a big old favour. Leave an iTunes review. It helps this haunted little podcast grow its shadowy wings. Feeling generous, want to help keep the tea steeped, the ghosts fed, and me appropriately caffeinated, support the show on Patreon, where you can help fund ghostly delights and unsettling dreams, and get early episodes, shoutouts, and exclusive high-quality audio rates. So thank you to all of you in advance who are even considering supporting me. Now, I want to say a massive thank you to my Patreon supporters. And first up, a deeply heartfelt thank you to my Old Night Tea Titan, the compassionate, kind, and ever-generous Matto Star. You're the kind of person who wouldn't just wait at the edge of nowhere. You'd bring a blanket, hot cocoa, and ask if anyone needed company on the way across. Your support, kindness, and unshakable empathy makes you more comforting than the afterlife's best porch light. Matto, you are the kind of soul who would sit with someone at the edge of nowhere. Not because it's easy, but because you know they need the company. You'd knock gently, wait patiently, and ask softly if they're ready. Never rushing the journey, only making it a little less lonely. If this story was about grief and love wrapped in silence, you are the warmth in that silence. The tea left steaming on the table, the blanket draped over shaking shoulders, the friend who shows up not just when it's convenient, but when it's needed. Thank you for being not just a supporter of this podcast, but a bright soul who reminds us that kindness is its own kind of light across the dark. Thank you, Matto. Have a marvelous, brilliant week, you kind and generous friend of mine. Thank you for the love and support you give. And now I want to say a massive thank you to my white tea warlords. First up is Lesosaurus Rex. Death tried to escort them once, but gave up halfway when they kept asking if the underworld had leg day. Death approached Lesosaurus Rex once, hesitantly, only to be told to wait until they'd finished their deadlifts. And listen, the Grim Reaper doesn't usually get told to circle the block, but Lesosaurus doesn't mess around. They're out there bench-pressing cursed objects, flexing on folklore, and turning every haunted gym mirror into a horror film with better lighting. If Lesosaurus had been home, in the house at the edge of nowhere, Elise had Death on her porch. Thank you, Lesa, for bringing chaotic energy and undead-level determination to this podcast, and for being my pal. Have a brilliant week ahead of you, mate. And know that Death considers you an end boss. My next white tea warlord is Maya, a true feline familiar in human form. She's got at least 4 cats, probably 13 more on the walls, and all of them know exactly when Death shows up and how to knock a vase off the shelf in protest. The Reaper once tried to visit Maya, but tripped over a catnip mouse, got scratched across the shins, and left a 1-star Yelp review titled, "Too Many Eyes Watching Me." Maya, your blend of mischief, mystery, and pure nope energy, is the magical spice in this haunted brew. Thanks for keeping it strange, sassy, and beautifully clawed. Have a kick-ass week ahead of you, Maya, and thanks for being my pal and supporting the show. And my next white tea warlord, Sangeetha, seer, sage, and part-time terror to the underworld. She didn't learn how to sense the dead, she was born that way. Death doesn't knock at her door, he calls ahead, nervously. Probably double books himself just in case she decides today's the day she rewrites the rules of the afterlife. In this story, if Sangeetha had been there, she would have skipped the porch waiting entirely, handed Elise a soul map and said, "Let's go here, we're late." You're not just a warlord, you're a myth. A psychic GPS for the haunted, and thanks for peering through the veil and still having time to listen to my nonsense every week. Cheers, you legend, and have a fantastic week ahead, mate. Thank you to all my white tea warlords and my old night tea titan for the amazing support you send my way. Love you all. And now for my amazing, brilliant frontline soldiers, my Earl Grey enforcers I am lucky to have. Rhonda Ray, Michael Krupp, Seductive Smiles, Jane Gumnick, Paige Kramer, Divided by Zero, Juicebox Andy, Joss Heather, Peter Raffaele, and Chad Warren. Thank you to all of you that support me through the podcast. You are legends. I cannot wait till next week, till we get to sink our teeth into more creepy stories. And as always, till next we meet.
Listeners gather. Thanks for listening, Legends. Thank you to my Patreon supporters. And a huge shout out to Matostar, Lezasaurus, Ameya, and Sanjitha.